Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need reminds of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And well, today, this afternoon, we're having Mr. John Quirk with us, and John has been worked for intelligence, for the Central Intelligence Agencies for many years. He's retired now. He has his own business where he tracks down funds that have been sequestered in banks throughout the world, but he's still keeping his finger on the pulse of what's going on in the Middle East and certainly in South and Central America. So without further ado, Mr. John Quirk. Hi, John. How are you doing?
How are you doing? Nice to be with you, Stan.
Well, these things seem to be going from terrible to even more terrible over there in the Near East and Middle East and now in South America, where President Ahmadinejad has just been taking a tour, going to Venezuela and certainly going to Ecuador and going into Nicaragua to meet the Daniel Ortega, a longtime communist. So give us your overview of what's going on.
Well, you know, about a year ago I wrote an article on what Iran would do to us if we attack them, and I think the clock is ticking and the other shoe is about to drop, both on Iran, what's happening with Israel, and of course what you said the recent tour was. One of the things I've heard about the president of Iran's tour is the Iranians have a number of plans and options if the United States takes military action. And what he was trying to do, as well as cement recent arrangements with Venezuela, he's been doing a lot in Venezuela. Just to summarize, he's signed like a non-aggression pact some months ago. There are Iranians at the nuclear facility. There are rumors that the Iranians are helping with a new biowarfare lab in Venezuela outside of Caracas. There's all these rumors about military equipment and weapons and building tractors in Venezuela. And, of course, I think we talked on your last show or the show before about the fact that the Iranians are building a gunpowder factory in Venezuela. There's lots of different agreements. What I've heard this time is that as we get closer to taking military action, one of the Iranian goals to hurt the United States is to try to damage us financially. And they're calling it, they're calling it what would be called the Great Drain financially. And what it is basically is the Iranians believe that because billions and billions flow overseas to finance the American trade deficit, and the world's central banks control about $6 or $7 billion in reserves, and this affects the money rates, that maybe Iran, Venezuela, even covertly Russia and China behind them could do something to cause a financial collapse of the United States. So this is one of their plans. I'm not an economist, but it happened before after World War One. It happened in previous wars, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, and they're trying to lay the groundwork to do this drain. And part of it is if we go to war with them, they would attack the Saudi and Kuwaiti oil fields, create oil to go up $100 a barrel or more, and create panic in the financial markets of the world.
Well, I think that is where we are certainly the most vulnerable. I think America is the mightiest military nation the world has ever seen. But we are also one of the most fragile monetarily. We're the greatest debtor nation in the world. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. I guess this afternoon or evening, depending upon what part of the country you're listening to us in, is Mr. John Quirk, who has been with the intelligence agencies for many years. He's now retired and has a business, and a little later while we'll let him give out his information on the business. But we were simply talking about what is really going on, and John has said that a year ago he had written an article suggesting what the Iranians would do to us if we were to attack them. Now, they apparently, Mr. Ahmadinejad, President Ahmadinejad, this last week or so has been down in South America making overtures to Venezuela, to Nicaragua, to Ecuador, all three of which, of course, have a radical left-wing president, and they have a non-aggression pact, at least, with Venezuela. But John says that it is his thesis that they have decided that if we attack Iran, they will go after us financially, and hoping that they can basically create financial chaos here in the United States. And certainly, if they were to attack the oil facilities in the Persian Gulf, they could drive the price of oil well up over $100 a barrel. And think of the impact that would have on our economy here. And think of what it would mean, of course, if we the countries of the world began to reject the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. So we are really very vulnerable financially. You pick up the story there, John.
Well, yes, and the real spoiler that has a two-edged sword is China, because China would stand to lose if we stop buying products from them. But at the same time, we owe them so much money, what they probably would do is not encourage a financial collapse like somebody like Chavez in Venezuela would like, or even Iran, but they probably would then be in a position down the line to extort the United States on a number of issues regarding Taiwan, Chinese expansion in Latin America, Chinese control of the shipping lanes, Chinese expansion with their Blue Water Navy, and even their new anti-missile program, which is going to cost us billions of dollars to counter. So the Chinese are in a very good position to step up to the plate and really either become a major superpower or extort us by using a problem that we have in the Middle East. Now, even though they're vulnerable for oil, Chavez is building a pipeline with the Chinese.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just saying that certainly, even though Iran is very vulnerable in the Middle East, they're helping Chavez build a pipeline. In fact, Chavez is building pipelines in several countries in South America, to facilitate getting the oil out to the markets of the world. So you pick the story up there.
Well, when we talk about Iran or even China or Venezuela, the whole world is kind of interrelated. I mean, it's kind of ironic that the North Koreans already have nuclear weapons and we can't do much about it, and we're relying on the Chinese to solve the problem diplomatically. They're dragging their feet to cause more problems with the United States. You've got the whole issue of Central Asia. Iran is the gateway to all that oil in Central Asia. Russia, China, and the United States are vying for it. If we lose in Iraq and we lose Iran, the United States will definitely be pushed out of Central Asia, and then Russia and China can dominate that area with billions and billions of gallons of oil, barrels of oil. So let's come back to Iran, and let's kind of update what's happening. As I said back in November and December and even a year ago, the crisis is building with Iran. It's building every day. Now, Condoleezza Rice has called for tighter sanctions. I don't think they're going to work. I don't think the Iranians are afraid of them. The Russian, the Chinese have not endorsed even sanctions against tires or auto parts or computers. The United States has called for new sanctions regarding centrifuges and uranium enrichment. The Iranians already have it, so that's not going to do much good. So I think on the one hand, we're overtly for tighter sanctions, but covertly, were probably under the table offering the Iranians billions of dollars, some kind of guarantee to protect their theocracy, as long as they at least give us potential to go in for inspections. Now, if the Iranians don't do that, I would say in the next 60 days, there'll be more pressure from Israel to have the United States do some type of military action, at least against the five or six major sites in Iran that have accelerated the production of weapons-grade uranium. So we are, I believe, we are heading towards a crisis equal to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, certainly don't you think that the concentration of naval forces in the Persian Gulf with the Eisenhower Task Force, the John Stennis Air Force Carrier Strike Task Force, the Boxer Task Force, some other ships that are coming from Great Britain, doesn't this suggest that we're really preparing for a war there?
Yes, we've got four carrier task forces there and a fifth one on the way now. The Eisenhower is actually down by Ethiopia, Somalia, but it could be back in the Gulf quickly. I mean, it's almost like a parking lot there. And then the Russians have raised the stakes because they've supplied new sophisticated missiles to go on Iranian submarines, which are... Their subs are very, very old, but it's kind of crazy. It's very hard for the United States Navy to detect these submarines because most of them are diesel. And even though our radar and that is very sophisticated, there's something where it's very difficult to detect them. The Russians just put on sophisticated missiles that could sink our carriers. So the Iranians also, this is probably what will happen. The Israelis are training now to drop tactical nuclear weapons on Iran. They're training in Gibraltar. The Americans are afraid of that, so they're accelerating their plans to do a limited military strike against Iranian facilities. The Iranians have a plan to attack the Saudi and Kuwaiti oil fields, try to draw Israel into the war. They've refitted Hezbollah with thousands of rockets through Syria. The Syrians are trying to overthrow the Lebanese government, which would help Iran and Syria against Israel. And by drawing Israel into the war, they would help unify their own people and possibly the Muslim world. That's not proven. But the Straits of Hormuz would probably be backed up like a parking lot because there's so many ships and missiles in the area. And even though the United States thinks the war would be over in a few days or possibly a couple weeks, the Iranians could continue to cause problems. They could also launch an attack against our troops in Iraq, hoping to cause lots of casualties and actually expand the war. So this is the kind of crisis we're moving to. I know the Bush people are doing intense diplomacy, but it doesn't seem like the Iranians are giving in on anything.
Well, do you think that perhaps George Bush would like to have this war to rescue his presidency? After all, right now he's got one of the lowest ratings in all time, somewhere 30% or less from the American people. Maybe if he had a big war with the Iranians and won that war, maybe then he'd go down in history as a great president. Do you think he's possibly contemplating that?
Well, I think he's contemplating that, but in a different scenario. I think he's thinking if we attack Iran, we accomplish a lot. We stop Iran from threatening Israel. They've threatened to wipe Israel off the face of the earth with nuclear weapons. We would stop most of the Iranian insurgency with the Shia in Iraq. We would guarantee eventual, hopefully, regime change in Iran, may or may not come about, but if we do get a regime change, we'll get access to all that oil in Central Asia. And, of course, we would take Hezbollah and hopefully Syria off the chessboard, which Israel wants in order to be able to better deal with the Palestinians and Hamas. So when you list the litany of things, there's lots of reasons for America to go to war. Our reasons, oil, protecting Iraq, protecting our troops, protecting Israel, regime change. And, of course, the Iranians, they do have a goal to destroy Israel. I think they really believe that. They want a Shia arc. They want Shia from Iran to Iraq in between Sunni Syria, and they are helping overthrow the Lebanese government because they want a Shia government. So Bush is very worried about that as well as his own popularity. So I really don't see either party giving in. I see it almost like World War, different than World War One. World War One, we had an assassination out of nowhere, and the whole region went into war from Europe to almost North Africa and the Middle East. This is a little bit different. We're already in. We've already surrounded Iran. We're in Afghanistan. We have contacts in Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. We're well based in Azerbaijan. The Russians don't like that. We're in Iraq. The Saudis are behind us. Bahrain is behind us. Kuwait, Jordan, Turkey is behind us. And a lot of the secular Muslim states actually would support regime change in Iran. So I don't see how we are going to extricate ourselves diplomatically. I think we'll probably be at war with Iran probably by June.
Well, of course, what would happen, though, if there's tremendous backlash, not from the secular governments over there, but the authoritarian governments, but from the people of those countries who are furious with what's happening, and they looked upon America's attack on Iran, even though they may be Sunni Arabs, but Sunni Muslims, but they look upon it as really an attack on the Muslim faith, and they rose up and they overthrew the Saudis, and they overthrew the Egyptian monarchy, and I should say the Egyptian state, and because, you know, if you really had free and open elections over there, I think that in many of those countries, the radical Muslims would take over.
Absolutely, I agree with you. Certainly in Central Asia, which has been, the Russians were repressive against Muslims for years, and they've operated in cells and terrorist groups, and they want to overthrow the governments of Central Asia. I think the one difference, the one thing that has changed in the last really few weeks, is some of our intelligence, both on the American side, which has been weak, and on the Israeli side, which has been pretty consistent, is we now know that the Iranians have about 5,000 to 6,000 tons of uranium reserves in a base called Saghan. We know that they probably have enough plutonium to build 30 atomic bombs a year, and the Russians supplied them with a reactor, a light water reactor, and they have heavy water production, which can only be used to secretly provide the plutonium for the bombs. And the whole hub of Iran's nuclear weapons program, these three research centers in Isfahan, which are protected by Russian anti-aircraft missiles, is probably where they would assemble them. So you have about 456 research sites, but you have one, two, three, about six sites where they could put the bombs together. The Israelis feel that they could put them together in a few months. And they already have the deployment. Okay, they have very sophisticated missiles. Their missiles are, the Shabad 5 can go 3,400 miles. The Shabad 4, with very good accuracy, is 1,250. And then they have smaller Shabads that can go anywhere from 200 miles to 800. And they're all very, very sophisticated. They're very accurate. So they could attack our ships, attack our bases in Kuwait. They could launch tons of missiles. And they could, there's enough, and I talked to an Israeli general the other day, and he said Hezbollah now has enough missiles, conventional missiles, to destroy and hit Tel Aviv.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mr. John Quirk. One of the things that really upsets, or concerns me, I should say, John, is the fact that the Russians have been selling the Iranians very sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles. And these would be used then to bring down either our planes or the Israeli planes. And apparently, I don't know, a couple of billion dollars worth of, or at least $1 billion worth of these very sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles, which apparently in the process of being delivered to Iran. The longer we wait, why the sooner those will be deployed, and they start bringing down some of our fighter planes or our bombers coming in. Certainly, this could be a disaster. And what would happen if you know they sunk one of our carriers?
Well, this is what the military is worried about. This is what the military is mainly worried about, that the Iranians would attack our troops, which are not in position. And we've got 160,000 troops in Iraq, but they're all over the place. Many of them are in Baghdad. They're not positioned to hold off a Iranian military strike. But the United States is getting ready several divisions which could actually move on Tehran if we had to. Yes, the Russian planes could shoot down our B-52s, our B-1s, our B-2s. They'd have a hard time shooting most of the B-2s down because they're stealth. But we would definitely have casualties because of the Russians. The Russians have sold them two kinds of missiles, anti-aircraft, like you said, and these new missiles that go on submarines. And we would be launching an attack mainly to take out the nuclear facilities, not to take out the Iranian Army, Air Force, or Navy. So the Army, Air Force, and Navy of Iran would defend and attack us, and we would be in a position to take casualties, and then we'd have to retaliate, and it could get very nasty. Plus, the Iranians, unlike the Iraqis or Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, I believe already have terrorists either in Latin America ready to come into the United States, or they're probably already here. They've had a year and a half, 2 years to put them here. So it's not going to be nice. I think that's one of the reasons we're doing this kind of under-the-table diplomacy, offering the Iranians billions, all kinds of incentives, with some guarantees that they won't go forward. I don't think the Iranians are going to buy that. I think that even if they did agree to it, they'd lie and continue to develop their nuclear plans. And the main reason it tells me that what they're doing is that's why they're bringing in the Russian anti-aircraft equipment. They're preparing for an attack.
Well, wouldn't they be foolish not to be preparing for an attack when it appears that, you know, the administration is already pretty well made up their mind that, you know, that they're going to do this if the Iranians won't give in to them.
Yeah, you know, for a long time on that point, for a long time I've been saying that there's about 456 sites where there's nuclear research. The military, the Pentagon, a friend of mine in the Pentagon told me the other day that there's really about 1,500 different targets that we would hit. And in order to do that, we'd have to use stealth bombers and fighters, F-15s, 16s, F-18s from the aircraft carriers, and Tomahawk cruise missiles from subs and ships, as well as these new bunker busters we have to destroy the underground facilities. And we would launch them from Missouri, Guam, and Diego Garcia.
Hold that thought, please, right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was saying he's been talking to some people in the military, and the plans are already there, even where the various planes will be launched from as we begin going after some 1,500 sites over there in Iran. But wouldn't there, you know, there's no way you could actually carry out an attack like that without having significant civilian casualties, are there?
No, I think if you attack the nuclear sites, there wouldn't be many civilian casualties. But if we go after all of the other targets, where there's probably, I think the Iranians have something like 60 to 70 missile bases with the Shahab rockets, yes, there would be civilian casualties. And even worse, the Iranians have very strong ties to the Taliban, and wouldn't cost them very much to lend aid to the Taliban in Afghanistan to stir that up and cause problems. They've already got Hezbollah ready to attack Israel, and the war could really expand. You mentioned problems with Saudi Arabia and Egypt. There's also problems with Pakistan. The Iranian intelligence service has a lot of contacts with Pakistani terrorist groups, and Musharraf's government could possibly be overthrown.
If Musharraf's government was overthrown, and especially was overthrown by people who were part of this radical Islamic movement, that would give them at least 75 nuclear weapons and certainly the missiles to deliver them. That would be a disaster.
Well, it'd be a disaster because the Indians, if they knew a fundamentalist government took over Pakistan, they would probably do a preemptive strike against Pakistan. And these are all the dangers that are going on in the world, and it's all got to do with, all these countries that have nuclear weapons, including the United States.
Well, of course, my understanding is that the American military is very unhappy, and I was reading an article just this morning by Seymour Hersh, and he was saying that many people in the military have cautioned against taking this line of action.
Yes, that's true. I don't think I've ever seen such disagreement among our military. Whether it's the Army, Navy, Air Force, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, people on the ground, there's great disagreement on all aspects of whether it's attacking Iran, whether it's putting more surge troops in Iraq, what we should do about Afghanistan since the Taliban's coming back. We've lost a lot of confidence with our NATO allies. They're getting tired of Afghanistan. The French are getting tired of being there. And it's not good. It's the type of war that's very difficult to claim victory, and yet attrition against casualties causes public opinion among our allies and even the American people to just want to pick up and get out.
Well, I think there are an awful lot of Americans who would like to see us pick up and get out of there, but apparently the president feels that he doesn't have to respond to the American people. After all, he's the commander-in-chief, and he can pretty well do what he wants to. At least this is what he said on the 60 Minutes interview over the weekend. Didn't matter that the American people didn't support him. Didn't matter that the members of the Congress didn't support him. He was going to make the ultimate decision, and he wasn't even necessarily going to listen to the generals. He was going to make the decision. Don't you think we should be a little concerned about one man unilaterally committing America to the possible consequences of massively expanding the conflict in the Middle East?
Well, I think one of the points that's driving President Bush is his strong belief that the other option with Iran is to accept them as a nuclear power. In other words, maybe we have to accept Iran with nuclear weapons.
After all, we've accepted India with nuclear weapons. We've accepted North Korea with nuclear weapons. I mean, why would we not want to accept them?
Well, there's two reasons for it. It's a good question, and it's quite different than North Korea or India. First of all, Iran is threatened to wipe out Israel, and Israel has tremendous influence on our foreign policy. And I think America has always fought for the underdog, and I think both our foreign policy apparati as well as the Israelis believe that Iran would use nuclear weapons. I don't think many people think the Iranians are just engaging in rhetoric. That's the one reason. The second reason, if you let Iran develop nuclear weapons, the people I know in the nuclear policy directorates and people that work on weapons of mass destruction say there's another 40 countries in the world that are on the verge of developing nuclear weapons, including Japan because of North Korea. So we've already let that cat out of the bag. We can't let another 40 countries go ahead and develop nuclear weapons.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is John Quirk, and we're really talking about the explosive situation, and I use that term intentionally, and the explosive situation that is existing and growing here in the Middle East. And Sean believes that within 60 days, unless something happens and some agreement is arrived at, and that certainly doesn't look very likely, that we'll be at war expanding the war with Iran. I believe we're already at war. After all, when you put embargoes on a country, you limit their ability to get financial help and certain supplies. These are really acts of war, aren't they?
Yes, and I think also, you know, Iran has played it very shrewdly. They took weeks to reply to the UN Security Council's demand to halt uranium enrichment. And when they did, they basically suggested that they have little intention, if any, of backing down. So they could be engaged in brinkmanship, but I don't think so. I think that they believe that the United States has already made the decision to attack them. They really believe that. Now, our military, retired Marine General Zinni said, hey, look, it's not a question of whether a first strike could be effective, but is the United States prepared for all that follows, the other shoe dropping, as I mentioned, and a much wider war in that whole part of the world, okay? The United States thinks it can contain that war by a surgical first strike, if you will, destroy the nuclear facilities, and that will be the end of it. The other reason the United States is accelerating their plans is that they are afraid if we do not take the Iranian facilities out from a conventional standpoint, the Israelis may use tactical nuclear weapons against the 5 or 6 sites. And that could be devastating to the world. Then Muslim countries might have to come to Iran's aid. A Muslim country is being attacked with nuclear weapons, and they could all attack Israel and the United States facilities in the area. So Barbara Tuchman in The Guns of August wrote day by day how the crisis built and built and built until one little spark set the whole fire, the assassination of Franz Ferdinand. Here you have two countries that are actually daily preparing for war.
All right, you hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. John Quirk, and John has a tremendous contacts within the intelligence agencies and within the leadership of not only of our own country, but countries throughout the world. One of the big problems that's going to come about is, what about world government and world law? Certainly, you know, at least when we attacked Iraq, where we had the nominal support of the United Nations, do you honestly think that the president would go ahead and attack Iran without the support, the United Nations permission and support? And what would be the implications if he were to do that?
Well, I think that's a very good question. Traditionally, the United States has always sought legal reasons to attack a country. We've also sought to get guarantees from all our allies and sometimes our adversaries. In this particular case, we have little support from anybody. NATO really doesn't support us. France and Germany don't support us. England is pulling away from us, our oldest ally. The UN is only guaranteed sanctions, and we have very, very strong opposition from Russia and China, who are both Security Council members and are supplying Iran or benefiting from oil's Iran. They don't want us to attack Iran. And a lot of people in the world just see America as a big bully and somebody that's flexing its superpower muscles. We're getting stronger militarily, economically, technologically. We're exporting and marketing all over the world. We're exporting by treaty. We're in building bases in many, many countries. We have air bases, military bases. So Russia and China certainly don't like that. They think that we want to dominate the world economically And so they are cheering our downfall on the sidelines. And in a way, Iran could be a big trap to lure us into this. It could be very devastating to the United States. However, going back to what President Bush wants for his legacy, I don't think he could possibly accept the legitimacy of Iran that has sponsored terrorism for so many years and calls for Israel's destruction. I just don't think any administration, Democratic or Republican, could possibly accept that. And at the same time, I think the Iranians should be willing to give up their nuclear power, but I don't think they want to. I think that they are hoping to be a nuclear power for the region. That's the only way that's going to protect their theocracy, if you will.
All right, so we seem to have a sort of a Mexican standoff here, but the problem is that in a Mexican standoff, if one fellow draws for the gun, the other person goes after the gun, and my fear is we might very well plunge the whole of the Middle East into a terrible confrontation. And when a war starts, you never know how it's going to end. Certainly when Franz Joseph, the emperor, was assassinated, Prince was assassinated, nobody realized, of course, the First World War would end with the destruction of the German Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Turkish Empire, right, the Russian Empire, and really the destruction of the world as we knew it. And if we expand a war there, can we be certain how the war is going to end?
No, but the decision, again, the president has to make. He has to decide between a nuclear-armed Iran or going to war. That's the decision. And if you accept a nuclear-armed Iran, Israel is never going to accept that. That's one thing. And then the other areas, even the Sunni countries like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, would start their own nuclear programs. Other countries would start their own nuclear programs, and I think the world would be in a much more dangerous position. So it's you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And I think the lesser of the two evils, the way the Americans think, kind of technocracy and technologically, is to take out the Iranians in a very, very short period of time. We would accomplish all of our goals. We would protect Israel, and we would stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons all over. That's what I think the president really believes in, and I think Rumsfeld, Cheney, Gates, maybe not our top military, but the rest of our policymakers believes that's the only way to really influence the world and fulfill American foreign policy goals.
Well, now, what then, let me take you back, though, to the question of the United Nations. Are we simply going to ignore the United Nations? I don't think we can ever get a vote to allow us to attack Iran through the United Nations. So then what do we do? Do we say, well, we're going to ignore the United Nations, we're just going to go to attack, because we have to do that. We have the responsibility for maintaining peace, and that's why we're going to do it?
Well, I think you have a good question there. The question is really, what is going to be the catalyst for the United States to attack? Is it going to be a piece of intelligence that says they now have nuclear bombs? Is it going to be a continued attack by Hezbollah against Israel? Is it going to be, I personally think the decision has been made. Remember, President Bush has a preemptive strike policy. Remember that? And it was instituted a couple years after 9/11. And it basically says we have a right to attack any country that's engaged in terrorism. So Iran is a terrorist state. They're getting close to developing nuclear weapons. He might come on television, ignore the United Nations, and simply say we had to attack Iran to stop them from, they might have maps and charts and show the Bushehr and Iraq and Isfahan and Sagan nuclear facilities and show intelligence that they have the weapons, or the Israelis may have it, and that might be the catalyst, and that would completely ignore the UN, yes. And I think Bush probably would do that.
All right. Well, certainly, assuming that he does that, what do you think the reaction of the remainder of the world would be? What would happen to the United Nations? It would almost be as if, well, the United Nations now is certainly of no consequence at all. The mightiest nation in the world is that we're going to ignore it. What would the response be in South America? What would the response be in Europe?
I think there will be continued anti-Americanism, continued hatred of the president, which is going on right now. We're losing parts of Latin America. We are undermining, many people believe, our allies in Europe, basically because the Europeans in many cases have lost the will, or they're intimidated by their own large Muslim populations in France, certainly in England, Spain, and Italy. They're worried about that. And the United States, I think, would stand alone. We'd have some of our old traditional allies, but I think we would stand alone, and I think we would be a target for continued sniping, blocking, thwarting by the Russians and the Chinese. They do not want us to be a superpower. France wants us out of Europe. Many countries resent the fact that we are a superpower. Other countries resent the fact that they think we're shoving democracy down their throats. And you have this whole clash of civilizations between the Muslim world and the Western world. And instead of most of the Western world supporting us, they look upon us as the heavies and the bad guys. And the other thing, it might be America's greatest hour. We stood up to the Nazis, the Russians, the Japanese militarists. We saved Europe twice from the evils of fascism and militarism. We saved the world from communism, and apparently people have short memories. So we might have to save the world again from a terrorist fundamentalist state. And if we don't do it, the Israelis will attack Iran, and I think the consequences there could even be worse.
All right, well, you'd mentioned earlier that you fear that there may well be some Iranian terror cells here in the United States, and I have every reason to believe that they do exist, that they've been here for many years. I have a book written in 1993 by, do you know Joseph Podansky?
Yes.
And he was writing back in 93 a book, Attack America, that there were actually Iranian terror cells here, but they're sleeper cells. They've been here for a long period of time, waiting for the word to be given. What implications would that have as far as our domestic security, and of course as far as the stock market, as far as our country, if we should suddenly begin getting massive or at least a significant number of terrorist attacks right here in the United States? Is this a possibility?
I think it's a strong possibility. I think the initial reaction would be panic. I think it would be similar to 9/11, where we were shocked. The economy went down. A lot of people didn't admit it. People stopped traveling to Florida and traveling around the United States. They certainly stopped traveling to Europe. Airlines took a nosedive. Remember, the government had to bail out several airlines. A lot of related industries went down. There'd be the whole issue of Americans losing confidence in the government to protect them. They'd say, why are we spending these billions on Homeland Security and Border Patrol, and why are we spending the money on airport safety if Iranians can slip across the border and blow up shopping centers or wherever their targets are? I think that would be a temporary type of thing. I think the FBI, since 9/11, has switched over many of its agents from foreign counterintelligence to the counterterrorism market. And in the last year, my friends tell me in the intelligence community, I don't have any insider information, but the FBI is spending more time on Iranian counterintelligence and counterterrorism than Al-Qaeda, PLO, or other groups. So I think the Bureau has had the last couple of years to develop lots of sources in the Iranian area. I can tell you that the United States has caught some Iranians traveling on Venezuelan passports, Chavez has issued thousands of passports to a variety of spiny creatures, terrorists, and so on. I think that our border patrol, our immigration, our customs are wise to the Venezuelans. I think they know how to identify terrorist groups and Iranians. I think we're in much better shape. I think we also probably have many more informants in the Iranian community that would help us identify the bad Iranians, if you will. Most of the Iranians in this country are great American citizens and have been here a long time, since the late 70s. So they know what's going on, and I think they'd cooperate. There would be some terrorism. I think the best way the Iranians could damage us is with the weapons of mass destruction. And there's no hard evidence that Iranian terrorists either have a biological, chemical, or nuclear weapon. If they had one, we'd be in real bad shape, I think.
And I certainly hope and pray that you're right, that those things are not there. You know, it was just, I think in October, when the President signed the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, a Defense Authorization Act, where he actually changed the status of the military so that it could now be used in America in the case of martial law, as it now has the ability to mobilize the National Guard without the consent of the governor. Certainly liberal Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont has said this actually is one of the most draconian pieces of legislation, because it actually encourages the president to declare martial law in America. Do you think this legislation was passed with the thought in mind of what we've been talking about?
Yes, I think so. I think the real reason it was passed is if there is a major terrorist attack, the government has the right and the necessity to call upon the National Guard immediately to curb any kind of civil unrest, control the freeways, control the borders, control access to railways and airports, and also to keep the economy moving, to make sure that the economy doesn't collapse because people could panic. So I think it's a necessary move. It's also used for different kinds of civil unrest. A week or two ago, the sheriff of Palm Beach County made a request to Jeb Bush in Florida that we needed National Guard down in South Florida to curb a lot of the street gangs, which were getting out of hand. Well, Bush didn't respond to it. But in times of civil distress or order, you have to have a force above the police that could do that. And I think that was the main reason.
And so you would feel that they're anticipating then civil unrest here, and they're just trying to stay ahead of it.
Yeah, I think they're anticipating the possibility of panic due to a terrorist attack. I'm not saying, you know, Americans are going to go in the streets and conduct civil unrest and loot and panic, but you never know. We've had three bad hurricanes in Florida, where I am, and the first week was okay, the second week was okay, the third week people started getting nasty. They ran out of bread, and they ran out of oil, and they ran out of gasoline, and there was more of a police presence. So if there were a major terrorist attack, a lot of those things, like food distribution, water, generators, would be disrupted, and you'd have to call out the National Guard to keep order. Yeah. And that's what the new terrorists are hoping for. They're hoping for panic, economic downturn in America. They're hoping for economic collapse. They're hoping for trouble within our own government, dissension in our own government. And I don't think it's going to happen, but I think that's what they're hoping it's going to happen.
Well, I certainly hope and pray that you are right and that the terrorists are wrong, but I feel that there are certain people within our positions of authority who are two steps ahead of the average American who really doesn't understand what's going on. But I think that they're covering all the bases. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, and I think we have to look at what our enemies are doing. I mean, Chavez in Venezuela said one time, if a nuclear weapon goes off in Miami, the gringos would panic and all run to Canada. We've got China that's not helping us solve the problem with North Korea. They're actually keeping it going. They've been negotiating 6 years, promising the Bush administration that they'll solve the problem. They actually are the problem, the Chinese. We've got the Russians. I mean, that government is no good. They're anti-American. They're extorting Europe for oil. They're selling weapons to all of our enemies. They're supposed to be our friends. It's a non-democratic state run by Putin. He's a criminal. I mean, they're all former KGB people lining their own pockets. They don't have the foggiest about democracy. So Russia, China are helping people like Venezuela and Iran and so on. It's going to continue until some of these people are removed from the map.
Amen to that. Well, our guest has been Mr. John Quirk, and I hope you've enjoyed our conversation. We'll be back in just a minute to wrap up our program here at Radio Liberty. Well, John, we've got 3 minutes. Would you like to get your website out and any other information you'd like to get out?
Yeah, sure. Our website is www.assetlocationinternational.com, and our email is on there. And we also have a association with the Diplomatic and Consular Academy, and we put on roundtables about Iran, weapons of mass destruction, Latin America, diplomacy, and so on. And we can send you information on that. And I just want to say, keep an eye on what's happening in Iran, in Venezuela, those two countries over the next couple months, and hopefully we'll avoid war. If not, I think the United States, as usual, will come through it with flying colors.
Well, I certainly hope and pray you're right, Chris. I hope and pray we do not have an expansion of the war in the Middle East. But you and I are not going to be able to change this, but I really appreciate so much your coming on and giving the benefit of your study and your analysis of what's going on. And certainly, I believe that we're probably approaching one of the most dangerous periods in the history of our nation. Would you concur with that or not?
Yes, I think it's going to be equal to the Cuban Missile Crisis or Pearl Harbor or what you have now that you didn't have with the Cuban Missile Crisis. You have small states that have nuclear weapons and the possibility that terrorists already have nuclear weapons. So it could disrupt all of our lives, one major weapons of mass destruction attack or a major war that could, foment future trouble, future hatred, pitting people against each other. We live in very tough and difficult times.
Well, we certainly do, and I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always
my pleasure.
I hope we can get you on our other programs here in the real near future, because I want everybody to hear what you have to say.
Thanks so much. God bless America.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I always enjoy having John on because, of course, his views, I think reflect that of many people, but he has contacts, and we've checked John out very carefully before we put him on there, and we've talked to people back in Washington, D.C., who've known him and his contacts when he was active within the Central Intelligence Agency. He certainly has contacts within the intelligence agencies throughout the world today, and he certainly has contacts with the leaders of the world and with our military leaders and with certainly the people who know what's going to happen, and we're in real trouble as a nation. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I do hope you out there in the listening audience have enjoyed our interview with John Quirk. And if you'd like to get in touch with his website, you can call us and we'll get it for you. Anyway, John certainly has excellent contacts. I may not agree with all of his conclusions, but then, of course, even my wife doesn't agree with me on everything. But the important thing is I want our listeners to understand we're facing probably the most dangerous situation we've been in 50 years. And if you haven't made preparations for the possibility that we may within 60 days be in a major war and there could be even the breakdown of civil society here. And believe me, the government's planning on that. That's why they passed the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act. We've got a great new four-tape set on the Military Commission Act, and it goes into the John Warner Act and the ability then to have martial law in America. And then, of course, if you do not know why we've recently refurbished the Japanese concentration camps for $38 million out in the middle of the Utah desert, because we never want the American people to forget how terrible it was that we put American citizens into concentration camps. And so that's why we're going to refurbish the Japanese concentration camps. But if that's really true, then why are they give $385 million to Halliburton to build new detention camps right here in America? They're sure not for the illegal aliens. We have a four-tape set on concentration camps. We have a concentration camp special with several excellent videos. You need to get this information out. You need to help us get the information out about what's really going on behind the scenes. I believe, of course, everything going on has been planned for a long period of time. I believe the plan for the attack on Iran long preceded 9-1-1, but we can't tell the American people that. They're really incapable of understanding. We have people who worship a different God, who have a different agenda, and their loyalty is not to the United States. Their loyalty is to the creation of a world government, and the only way to bring it about will be a worldwide Holocaust with carnage and horror, similar to what we had after the First World War, when the people of Europe were willing to go into a world government, similar to what we had after the Second World War, where the people of Europe were willing to give up their sovereignty and have a world government. But the American people weren't. And they're going to have to be punished. And they're going to have to know what the horror that existed in Europe during the Second World War, which I witnessed when I was there as a young military officer in the early 1954 era. You need to understand that there is a different agenda. And so you can certainly get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get my talk on the world revolution. It will begin to introduce you to much of what's going on today. You need to get our four tape set on why the buildings fell. That's why the buildings fell. My interviews with William Rodriguez, who was in the North Tower on the morning of 9/11, and before the plane hit up above, why there was an explosion in the basement. A massive fire explosion in the basement. And, of course, it's a fascinating story. You can hear him tell it. Of course, he has described it in our December newsletter. It's available at radioliberty.com. But we hope you want to get the four-tape set. Why did the buildings come down? Our four-tape set on the Military Commission Act. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you have not got a Berkey water filter, if you don't have your emergency food supplies in, your emergency health supplies, and I'm talking about the things you would need to maintain your health in case, of course, we were having difficulty getting all the things we ordinarily need to get. Certainly, if you need medicines, you should go to your doctor and lay in a supply. Don't put it off. I've been at this game for 44 years. I've witnessed an awful lot of conflicts, but I've never had the feeling that I have today, that we're on the edge of some very, very serious problems. And I believe America, as we've known it, will shortly change and change dramatically. As we defy the rest of the world, as we go to war, without the authorization of the United Nations, another preemptive strike, but now we've established the principle. Preemptive war is perfectly all right and quite acceptable to the people of the United States. And then we ask, of course, to pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, our number 1-800-544-8927.